talked a little bit last week about Thomas Campbell, and of course, he is a seceder Presbyterian. He's come to America mostly at the urging of his doctor because the weather's better in America. They used to do that. You know, people would go to Arizona for the weather. Well, he came to America for the weather and associated himself with an associated presbytery. Remember, associated presbyteries, that would have been in the seceder line. And in about 1809, Thomas began, with 21 other minister friends of his, began something that was called the Christian Association of Washington. And that year, they published, mostly based on the writing of Thomas, what's called the Declaration and Address of the Christian Association of Washington. And this was a document that kind of lays out what their view of the purpose and the way that the association was going to work. It is one of those documents that's generally considered very, very important in the context of the Restoration Movement. And as we go through it, you'll see how Thomas starts to lay out some principles that have become very, very important to us. Now, he wasn't the first person that ever laid down these principles, but he was the first in the Americas who pursued it in the way that he pursued it. Now, remember, we've already talked about Barton W. Stone and how he had started the Springfield Presbytery along with five of his minister friends. It grew, and then they decided that the Springfield Presbytery itself was an extra-biblical organization, and they willed it to die. So about that time, unknown really to Barton Stone, who's working in Kentucky, Thomas puts this group together, or I say Thomas put the group together. That's probably not accurate. This group was formed, but this group is in Pennsylvania. As you go through the Declaration and Address, what you find is some introduction material, and then you find nine resolutions. And then he stops after he's presented those nine resolutions, and he gives us some more introduction material. And then he presents 13 propositions. Tonight, what we're going to try to do is go through some of the introduction material and then do the nine resolutions. And you'll see how important these things are as they lay out what, in their mind, this Christian association was going to do. And the first thing he says, if you read through the introduction material, is it's time for Christians to act, well, the way he says it, to act on their own. Don't sit around on your hands waiting for churches and presbyteries and organizations to reform. It's time for Christians to look at the Bible themselves and to act on their own to redress the current state of division that existed among churches in Pennsylvania. Now, remember, he's had experience with the Presbyterians and then the seceders. And then the seceders broke into the burghers and the anti-burghers. He's just fed up with all of this. And he says it's time for Christians to act on their own. And he makes a couple of statements that are really, really important in my mind as you go through this introductory material. He says, no man can be judged for his brother, so no man can judge for his brother. Every man must be allowed to judge for himself, as every man must bear his own judgment. Every man must give account of himself to God. You know, it will not do for us to approach God in the day of judgment. And he says, why did you do what you were doing? It won't help to say, well, that's what Dean told me that the Bible said. You're going to answer on your own, as I will answer on my own. And everyone is going to answer on their own. There's only one group of people that are ever called to answer for other people and what happens to them, and that's the eldership. Now, teachers are given a higher responsibility because they have to be careful what they teach is biblical, but the elders are they give an account for those that are in their charge. It's a frightening thing in some ways to be an elder. But Thomas says we're all going to stand in the judgment day, and we're going to all have to answer. Whether the elders also have to answer for us or not, we have to answer for what we have done. And we're individually responsible to read the Bible and come to conclusions about what we ought to be doing. So you can't rely on anybody else. You're going to have to do it yourself. Then he says, the divine word is equally binding upon all. So all lie under an equal obligation to be bound by it and it alone, not by any human interpretation of it, and that therefore no man has a right to judge his brother except insofar as he manifestly violates the express letter of the law. We're not bound by human interpretation. We're bound by what the Bible says. And that's not to say that we're not going to have to draw our understanding of all of the biblical information into some sort of judgment, but it's a judgment that we have to make for ourselves, and we are not bound by our judgments. We're bound by what the letter of the law says. Again, that's important. No man judges his brother except it's on the basis of manifestly violating the letter of the law. And then he kind of concludes this section saying, our desire, therefore, for ourselves and our brethren would be that rejecting human opinions and inventions of men as of any authority, or as having any place in the church of God, we might forever cease from further contention about such things, returning to and holding fast by the original standard, taking the divine word alone for our rule, the Holy Spirit for our teacher and guide to lead us into all truth, and Christ alone as exhibited in the world for our salvation. By so doing, we may be at peace among ourselves. He was convinced that if we returned to what the Bible says, that we would all be together. But in his mind, what pushes us apart are the interpretations. It's the creeds that people write to try to somehow gather all of the bits and pieces of information in the entire Bible that talks about Jesus into one coherent statement. And I appreciate what they're trying to do, but it has a tendency to divide. Somebody had a comment. Okay. So then he presents what he sees as the function of this association in 9 resolutions. Okay. He says, 1, we form ourselves into a religious association under the denomination or under the name of our association, the Christian Association of Washington, for the sole purpose of promoting simple evangelical Christianity, free from all mixture of opinions and inventions of men. Absolutely. I think he's got the right idea. Now, the second thing that he said was that if you wanted to be a part of this association, that you were requested to, according to your ability, cheerfully and liberally subscribe a certain specified sum to be paid half yearly for the purpose of raising a fund to support a pure gospel ministry that shall reduce to practice that whole form of doctrine, worship, discipline, and government expressly revealed in the Word of God, and also for providing the poor with the Holy Scriptures. So they had 2 main goals. First goal was to hire a preacher who would preach just the pure gospel. Remember, no inventions of men, no opinions, just the gospel. And they wanted to buy Bibles and give them to the poor who could not afford Bibles. And this is at a time when owning books was a fairly expensive proposition. Not a lot of people owned books because of the way that they were printed. It was an expensive thing to own a book. So he has 2 goals. 1, we're going to hire a preacher. We're going to send them out and they're going to preach. We're going to pay them, and we're going to buy Bibles and distribute them. Now, this differs in some ways from what Barton W. Stone had said when he willed the Springfield Presbytery to come to an end. His goal was that individual churches would hire their own preachers. So in some ways, there is a slight difference here. I don't think that Thomas Campbell ever wanted to supplant individual churches. And he didn't want the Christian Association of Washington to tell churches who they ought to hire to preach the gospel. But they wanted to have funds so that this association could hire a preacher and send him out. Number 3. This society shall consider it a duty and shall use all proper means in its power to encourage the formation of similar associations, and shall for this purpose hold itself in readiness upon application to correspond with and render all possible assistance to such as may desire to associate for the same desirable and important purposes. So they perceived that these associations would exist all across Pennsylvania and that they would be made up of people who worshiped in different churches. So you have an association of Christians that's in some senses bigger than the local church. Okay. But this is important. This society by no means considers itself a church. Nor does at all assume to itself the powers peculiar to such a society. We can't do what churches can do. We cannot, and we will not do what churches do. Nor do the members as such consider themselves as standing connected in that relation. So the members don't think of themselves as a church. Because then you would be a member of a local congregation and you would be a member of another church that was called the Christian Association of Washington. He says, we're not a church. He says, we are merely voluntary advocates for church reformation. And as possessing the powers common to all individuals who may please to associate in a peaceable and orderly manner for any lawful purpose, namely the disposal of their time, counsel, and property as they may see cause. So, it's the basis upon which individuals in other times have banded together and formed publishing associations, publishing companies, individual Christians. He would argue churches don't do that, but individual Christians can do that if they want to. It's not the job of churches to educate children, but a group of Christians may band together to write curriculum and sell it to those people that are going to homeschool their children. It's the same basis upon which a group of individuals gathered together and started some colleges. Probably the foremost, the one that most people are familiar with, is Florida College. It was a group of Christians that got together and said, we want to have an institution of higher learning that can grant degrees so that people can get jobs. And we're not a church. We don't take money from churches. We only take money from individuals. We do charge tuition for people to go to school here. And we're not going to tell churches how to conduct their own business. We're just a group of individuals who band together. Now, anytime you have an organization like that, you have to be very careful that the second organization, individuals banded together, doesn't start deciding that across the brotherhood, this is the way we're going to do things. That's not their function. And as far as Thomas Campbell was concerned, this association was just a group of people that wanted to get together and study the Bible. And by studying the Bible, then they could take the results of their study back home with them. And most of these folks that were joining this were ministers. It's interesting that they did charge for people to be a part of this. Churches would never do that. Churches don't have any kind of a membership fee. And I would argue that if you charge the membership fee, you've distorted the entire purpose of the church. But they don't have a membership fee. We do individually support the church. Individually, we may decide to send support to a preacher in a different country. We may just choose to support a preacher in this country. When I was first preaching in Brookings, a man in Brea, who I knew very well, owned a couple of gas stations and had done very well for himself, Bill Rowe. Bill decided that it was so important to him that there be a church in Brookings that he helped to support me in Brookings. And Keith Roberts also helped to support me. In fact, when I went to Brookings, I didn't have the funds that I needed to have for a salary. I didn't have them all. And Keith sat me down and he said, whatever you're lacking, I personally will make up. Not that he could speak for the church in Cottage Grove where he worshiped, and he wasn't doing that. And the church in Cottage Grove was helping. But Keith wanted to say, these are my funds. It's, you know, based on the discussion that the apostles had with Ananias and Sapphira in Acts. He said, when you sold the property, the money was your own. You weren't under any compulsion to give it to the church to help in the work that the church was doing. It was your own money. So that's what they were saying. Number five, this society, formed for the sole purpose of promoting simple evangelical Christianity, shall, to the utmost of its power, countenance and support such ministers and such only as exhibit a manifest conformity to the original standard in conversation and doctrine. So it's what you teach and the way that you live, in zeal and diligence, only such as reduced to practice that simple original form of Christianity expressly exhibited on the sacred page, without attempting to inculcate anything of human authority, of private opinion, or inventions of men, and having any place in the constitution, faith, or worship of the Christian church, or anything as a matter of Christian faith or duty for which there cannot be expressly produced a thus saith the Lord, either in express terms or by approved precedent. So, you keep opinions out of the church. Go ahead. This phrase, thus saith the Lord, either in express terms or by approved precedent, that became a watchword in the development of the church. Comment, Wes? Nice to see your shining face over there.
Sorry.
No, that's quite all right. Okay. Number six. A standing committee of 21 members, and there were 21 original members. I don't know. That's probably where they came up with this number of 21. Of unexceptional moral character, and I think that's one of those times when they meant to say exceptional. I don't think they meant unexceptional. Anyway, 21 members of exceptional moral character, inclusive of the secretary and treasurer, be chosen annually to superintend the interests and transact the business of the society. So the society, this group, is going to assemble funds. They're going to have a treasurer and a secretary who writes things down as they happen. And it's going to be up to 21 members how they're going to spend the money that they raise. That said committee be invested with full powers to act and do in the name and behalf of their constituents whatever the society had previously determined. So somebody's going to have to be in a position to say, yes, this is what we're going to do. For the purpose of carrying into effect the entire object of its institution, and that in case of any emergency unprovided for in the existing determinations of the society, the committee be empowered to call a special meeting for that purpose. So this tends to be just housekeeping stuff. Number 8, society will meet at least twice a year. For instance, on the first Thursday of May and of November. And that the collectors appointed to receive the half-yearly quotas of the promised subscriptions be in readiness at or before each meeting to make their returns to the treasurer that he may be able to report on the state of the funds. The next meeting will be held at Washington, that's Washington, Pennsylvania, by the way, on the first Thursday of November next. I love the way they say that. First Thursday of November, that each meeting of the society be opened with a sermon. And this is interesting, the constitution and address read. In other words, this document's going to be read each time we meet because we want to impress on people why we're meeting. And a collection lifted for the benefit of the society. And that's an old way of saying we're going to take up the collection then. Okay. That all communications of a public nature be laid before the society at its half-yearly meetings. So before the society would put out any document, they would bring it before the membership at one of the half-yearly meetings. Well, what do you think of the Washington Association, the Washington Christian Association, or the Christian Association of Washington?
Kind of interesting to see that they felt like they needed this association as opposed to just, was this in addition to like the church leadership, like the deacons and the elders?
Yes, that would have functioned in individual local congregations still, Matt.
Okay.
I think most of the people that were originally in the association were the ministers of the various congregations.
Are you going to read number 9?
Oh, hello. That this society relying upon the all-sufficiency of the church's head, that's Jesus, and through his grace, looking with an eye of confidence to the generous liberality of the sincere friends of genuine Christianity, holds itself engaged to afford a competent support to such ministers as the Lord may graciously dispose to assist at the request and by invitation of society in promoting a pure evangelical reformation by the simple preaching of the everlasting gospel and the administration of its ordinances in an exact conformity to the divine standard as aforesaid. And that, therefore, whatever the friends of the institution shall please to contribute toward the support of ministers in connection with this society, who may be sent forth to preach at considerable distances, the same shall be gratefully received and acknowledged as a donation to its funds. Their tax system wasn't as well developed as ours. They didn't pay income taxes back then. And they didn't have 501c3 corporations and all of that kind of stuff that we have. But essentially what they're saying is that if you donate funds to this society, that it will be accepted as a donation if anybody asks. And I don't know who would have asked for the nature of the funds that were donated to be specified, but I suppose that might have been the case. Today, if you send funds to a nonprofit, if you send funds to Florida College, or any of the other institutions, Fried Hardman, Abilene Christian, you can request that they give you a letter that specifies that you made a donation to a nonprofit organization, and it can be filed with your taxes, just like the contribution that you make to the local church. Now, I do find it interesting that they felt it necessary to build this pool of money that could come from a broader base than just what existed in any local congregation. When, for instance, I was preaching in Brookings, I was receiving help. The church in Brookings was paying part of my salary, and I was receiving help from 5 other congregations, all of them in the state of Oregon. Colbert Road was one. And in the course of preaching in Brookings, one of the churches that was helping me divided. And instead of getting a check from them on the first of the month, which was salary, I got a letter that said, "We can't support you anymore." Now you can imagine how difficult that is for a preacher in that kind of setting. I didn't have a lot of funds set aside, saved up so that I could continue. That was a real blow. I mean, I was making $1,100 a month, and my rent was $600 a month. So when I got a letter that said, "We can't support you," that was hard. And they perceived that this bigger organization would be able to be more consistent in supporting different ministers. And I have no ill will for the church that divided, and they didn't know that that was going to happen, and they said, we can't send you any more funds. When I was preaching in Alaska, the church in Brea said, you know, we've kind of hit a hard spot, and we're not going to be able to send you any more support. We're not going to be able to send you any more help. In fact, we want you to leave Alaska and come to Brea and preach at Brea. And I did. I wound up doing that. But when you're relying for a source of support on a bunch of small sums coming from a lot of different churches, that can be a little iffy. And, you know, most of us kind of worry. It's nice to have a steady income, so you'll know that you can rent, you can pay your rent, and you can buy groceries and all of those kinds of things. And I've always been treated wonderfully. I told you about losing the support of the church that divided. About that time, there was a Christian who came back to the United States. He had been stationed in Adak, Alaska. And there were two families in Adak, two families of Christians. They were not allowed to spend any money. Because they were on a military base, the chaplain's office arranged for them to have a place to meet. They could not even spend money to buy materials for the Lord's Supper. The chaplain's office took care of all of that. So these two families, they set aside and saved a certain portion that they were going to contribute to the church. Well, when he left, he came back through Brookings, and I had been corresponding with the church up there and sending them tapes of sermons and things like that. He came back through Brookings, and he found out that we had lost that support, and he wrote me a check that made up for that support for the next 3 weeks or 3 months. And I hadn't said anything to him about it. But I am convinced that God takes care of his people. But it's a little hard when you're preaching. And so they wanted to say that we're confident that we will have the funds based on the free will offering of those people that are associated with this group. We will have the funds to support a preacher or preachers. And they did, by the way. Now, there's something else that happens with an association like this. And Thomas doesn't ever address this. Alexander, his son, debated with a number of different people, particularly with some people that represented the Catholic Church. And Alexander, at the time, just my impression, needed to say that he represented more than, well, take me for an example. He represented a bigger group than the Coburg Road Church of Christ. The Catholic Church is not interested in debating the Coburg Church of Christ. Catholic Church would be interested in debating the Church of Christ or an association of churches of Christ. I can't find that was ever a motivating factor in what they did. But I know that it turned out to be a motivating factor. And I have never on my own been a part of a larger association than just the local church. Never wanted to be, have been asked to be, but never wanted to be. There's a ministerial association here in Eugene, and I've been contacted and asked to be a part of that ministerial association. It would be very difficult for me to do that because I don't think that ministerial association would willingly sign on to the kinds of things that we read here, that we're just going to preach the pure gospel and we're going to preach all of it. If I were to associate with that ministerial association here in Eugene, I would have to leave off preaching about baptism. I couldn't do that. So I've not joined that ministerial association. And I get the impression that this was kind of what they were trying to do. Remember, this is at a time when they were having big camp meetings. And people would gather in a particular place. Sometimes 2,000-3,000 people would gather in a particular place. And they would come and set up a camp and stay there for 3 weeks or sometimes a month, and different ministers would preach, and they would go and listen to the ministers. They weren't restricted to just Methodist ministers or just Presbyterian ministers or just Christian, what I would think of as Christian ministers. They were from across the board. And what they were saying was, we can be together, but you can't teach that we need a presbytery if we're going to be together, because a presbytery is unknown in New Testament information. An eldership is known, but never a presbytery that's bigger than the local congregation. It has the right to tell a local congregation what they will do. This association never claimed that right.
I'm just curious, excuse me, Dean.
Go ahead.
Did you tell these folk why you were opposed to joining them?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. We had a long conversation, and they were very, very cordial about it. And at the end of the day, they said, you know, it probably wouldn't work. I have been asked to join other ministerial associations. I have never sent funds to Florida College. I did not attend Florida College. I attended the University of Redlands and then University of California at Riverside. Never went to a quote unquote Bible school. Never attended a quote unquote seminary. Not that I'm opposed to people banding together to form an institution of higher learning. I would be opposed to it if they said, we will tell all the churches how they should comport themselves, the decisions that they should reach. We will make decisions for the universal Church of Christ. I would be absolutely opposed to that. But I'm not opposed to a group getting together to decide what they're going to do. Now, this kind of thing can create a problem. It wasn't too long ago that Homer Haley was involved in controversy around the idea of divorce. I disagreed with some of the things that Homer said, but I think he looked at biblical information and he drew a conclusion from the biblical information. I disagreed with him. That didn't mean that there was a rupture in fellowship, but we just reached a different conclusion. He was broadly acknowledged as one of the outstanding scholars among churches of Christ as far as the minor prophets were concerned, has written extensively, has a book on the minor prophets. Florida College was going to have a lectureship, and they were going to provide an opportunity for different men to speak about their area of expertise, and they would invite Christians from all over the country. Anybody that wanted to come could come and listen to these men speak. Well, they had invited Homer Haley to come and speak about the minor prophets, which made a lot of sense. He studied it more than most people had. And then there was this controversy concerning divorce, and they decided not to invite him. Now, why did they decide not to invite him? Because if they had, some people would not have continued to support the institution. That's an institution that is organized around not a profit motive, but continuing to exist. And they had every right to decide not to invite him. They didn't have the right to tell churches, you can't invite Homer Haley to come and talk about some particular area where he has expertise. But they were perfectly within their bounds to decide not to invite him. And that was the conclusion that Homer Haley reached. There were some people that wanted Florida College or a publication like the Gospel Guardian, a monthly publication. A group of people put it together and they mailed it out. They wanted Florida College or the Gospel Guardian or somebody to say, look, these are reliable preachers who are the kind of people that you should ask to talk about biblical information. And there were some people involved with the Guardian. There were some people involved with Florida College who were perfectly willing to take on that responsibility to tell churches who they should hire. That's overstepping the responsibility that they had. That was not what Florida College said. But I know that there were people who were willing to say that that was the way it ought to work. You know, we gather together the best and the brightest, and we let them make decisions, and we listen to them. Okay. Enough said. We know what some of the problems can be. I'm confident that from everything that I can read, Thomas wanted to put together a study group. He didn't want it to be a church. He never wanted it to dictate to churches what they were supposed to do. It was just a group of individuals who got together to do a particular job. Now, would Barton Stone have argued with him? Maybe. Because he's taking a slightly different tack than Barton W. Stone takes. I tend to be more in the Barton W. Stone camp than I do in the Thomas Campbell camp. Thomas Campbell camp. That's a terrible thing to say. I feel more affinity for Barton Stone's reasoning than I do for Thomas Campbell's reasoning.
Dean?
Yes.
Even when you have good reasoning that you're not going to impose your think so on somebody else, you still have people who are looking to follow somebody. And that's where the first missteps are in association like this, is because people keep asking, well, who should I do this? Or is this person okay? And looking for them to be the authority when they don't want to be the authority. They want to just be able to spread the gospel in a different way other than what churches did, which is not the way God said to do it.
Yeah, you're right. Even though, and I think you make a very good point, that even though Thomas would never have said, we're going to dictate to churches what they ought to do, it is true that there were people in churches who, rather than study the matter for themselves, said, well, what does the association think about it? And you're right. That's a very, very dangerous position to be in. Those people have subverted the purpose for which the Christian Association was even founded. That's why it's so important to see how Campbell began the introductory material in the Declaration and Address. It's time for us to act ourselves, to understand and to do. None of us can say, but that's what Dean said, or that's what Lenny said, or that's what Charlie said, or that's what Ted said. None of us can say that. We have to make decisions ourselves. We're all going to stand individually in judgment. Okay, thank you, guys.